Hello. My name is Leslie. Welcome to our podcast featuring excerpts from Dr. Ed's morning briefing, which is produced by our team at Yordani Research. Today's commentary is dated Monday, March 16, 2020, entitled The Best Cure for a Viral Pandemic is a Viral Panic. The first topic focuses on the Fed's move announced Sunday night. Just as we were about to send out our advance copy of Monday's morning briefing on Sunday evening, the Federal Open Market Committee, FOMC, slashed the federal funds rate by 100 basis points to a range of 0 to 0.25%. The Federal Reserve Board of Governors slashed the discount rate from 1.50% to 0.25%. In addition, QE bond purchases will resume. The Fed will increase its holdings of Treasury securities by at least $500 billion, and its holdings of agency mortgage-backed securities by at least $200 billion. Last week's liquidity crisis in the capital market certainly spooked Fed officials, as much as it spooked investors. These measures will pour more liquidity into the markets. They should help to stabilize them. Of course, there is nothing the Fed can do about the viral pandemic. But these moves should help to calm the pandemic of fear in the financial markets. The second topic focuses on the virology of the COVID-19 epidemic. I have 5 children. 2 of them are in college. Now both of them are home because their school second semesters have been terminated, as administrators reacted to a couple of local cases of COVID-19, I think that they acted out of an abundance of caution. That's a good thing. The more that we all wash our hands, practice social distancing, and stay home and away from grandma and grandpa, the sooner that the viral pandemic should abate. In other words, the global pandemic of fear may be the best and fastest cure for the COVID-19 disease. Could it be that the seasonal flu is attributable to the seasonal school year rather than the seasonal weather? The flu season tends to start at about the same time as kids go back to schools and colleges during the fall. The kids infect one another and come home from school every day or during Thanksgiving and the winter break, infecting the rest of us. Many of us get the flu, even if we got flu shots, and some of us die. But the flu season ends in the spring, especially once school lets out. Perhaps, the COVID-19 disease will go away more quickly, at least on a seasonal basis, now that the kids are home. Our business model at Yordani Research doesn't have to change as a result of the pandemic. We didn't open our doors for business when we started it in 2007, because we were a virtual company then and have been ever since. We all work from our homes, which everyone who can is doing now, in effect self-quarantining. Imagine if more people began to see the benefits of not commuting to work. We can spend more time getting needed sleep, more time actually working, and more time with our families. Something good can come out of this pandemic. Everyone is a virologist these days. Everyone has an opinion on how long the pandemic will last and how bad it will be. Pessimists are naturally pessimistic, while natural-born optimists, like myself, are doing our best to avoid getting infected by the pessimists. I'm expecting that the pandemic will pass sooner rather than later. The panic reaction, as evidenced by the run on toilet paper, should help to make that happen. The kids coming home and social distancing should help. Consider the following related observations. Point number 1, the weather story. Warmer weather may also help to end the pandemic, but that's a controversial subject. There's a lot of skepticism about the vulnerability of coronaviruses to hotter weather. As Annie sings, the sun will come out tomorrow. But would we bet our bottom dollars that it will burn off the virus? Virologists affiliated with the Global Virus Network have found that temperature and latitude may have a direct link to the spread and seasonality of COVID-19, according to their March 10 report. Their World Temperature Map, March to April 2019, of major outbreak zones, reveals that, quote, to date, COVID-19 has established significant community spread in cities and regions along a narrow east and west distribution, roughly along the 30 to 50 N corridor at consistently similar weather patterns, 5 to 11 degrees centigrade, and 47 to 79% humidity, end quote. The report also suggests that COVID-19 should diminish considerably in affected areas in the coming warmer months, assuming no mutations enhance the virus's temperature resilience. However, it could come back in the fall and winter. We may just have to learn to live with it and find vaccines and cures before it does so. By the way, the virus dissipated rapidly recently in the Wuhan area. The weather there gets extremely hot in the summer, they call it one of the three furnaces of China, and March temps this year are way above average for the month. Point number 2, the China story. A table in the World Health Organization's World Health Organization March 13 report on the COVID-19 situation in China, up until that date, shows 80,991 cases and 3,180 deaths, attributable to the virus or its complications in all of China. But remarkably, 67,786 of those cases and 3,062 of those deaths have been in Hubei, where the outbreak started. A province of 59.1 million people, Hubei accounts for just 4.1% of China's population of 1.428 billion, yet it has seen 83.7% of the country's confirmed COVID-19 cases and 96.3% of all its COVID-19-related deaths. Outside of Hubei, all the rest of China has had only 13,205 COVID-19 cases and just 118 related deaths. Point number 3, the Italian story. A March 12 Wall Street Journal article reported that in Italy, which has the oldest population in the world after Japan, 58% of COVID-19 patients who died so far were over 80 years old, and a further 31% were in their 70s, according to the National Institute of Health, Italy's disease control agency. According to a paper published in the Intensive Care Medicine Journal utilizing 2012 data, Italy had 12.5 intensive care unit, ICU, beds per 100,000 of its population that year, while Germany had 29.2 ICU beds per 100,000 inhabitants. A different paper, published by the National Center for Biotechnology Information in 2015, states that capacity in the U.S. is even higher, at 34.2 ICU beds per 100,000 people. Furthermore, in Italy, there aren't enough specialized doctors and nurses to staff ICUs. ICU wards across the country were already some 3,000 doctors short before the coronavirus outbreak, according to the union that represents them. Point number 4, the H1N1 story. In the spring of 2009, scientists recognized a particular strain of flu virus known as H1N1. During the 2009-2010 flu season, H1N1 caused the respiratory infection in humans that was commonly referred to as swine flu because of genetic similarities to influenza viruses in pigs, even though there is no evidence the virus spread between pigs or pigs to humans. Because so many people around the world got sick that year, the World Health Organization declared the flu caused by H1N1 to be a global pandemic. In August 2010, the World Health Organization declared the pandemic over. The new H1N1 influenza virus cropped up out of season in late spring. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there were about 60.8 million cases of infection with the novel type of influenza virus in the U.S. between April 2009 and April 2010, with a total of approximately 274,304 hospitalizations and 12,469 deaths. While that death toll may sound high, it's over an entire year, and in fact is far lower than was initially expected. The strain of influenza also turned out to have a case fatality rate of just 0.02%, well below even many typical seasonal influenzas. COVID-19 is considerably more transmissible and more lethal than H1N1, according to most virologists. Point number 5, bottom line. The best cure for this viral pandemic may very well be what we are all doing and refraining from doing. The third topic focuses on financial markets and investors' dash for cash. Last Thursday, March 12, when the markets were getting crushed by the dash for cash, one fellow who manages lots of money for a university endowment in Texas told me that he, like me, has learned not to panic over the years, because panics don't last very long, and have always been followed by resumption of the bullish long-term trend in stock prices. That same day, several other seasoned money management pros told me that it fell to them like a capitulation bottom. My gut instinct was that they were right, but I didn't have the guts to load up on S&P 500 futures, which soared the next day. The S&P 500 peaked at a record high of 3,386.15 on February 19. it plunged 26.7% through Thursday, March 12. It rebounded 9.3% on Friday the 13th. So now it is down 19.9% from the top. This could be a fast bear market like that of 1987. However, this time, a short recession is likely. That would lead to a drop in forward earnings, unlike 1987. But perhaps the worst is over for the forward PE. It plunged from 19.0 at the top to 13.9 on Thursday, and rebounded to 15.2 on Friday, which is a very reasonable valuation multiple, given how low the bond yield is, assuming, of course, that the viral pandemic will abate by mid-year, as I do for now. There was a mad dash for cash on Thursday. Everyone seemed to want to get out of everything at the same time to raise cash. Stock prices plunged, and the S&P 500 VIX jumped to 75.47, the highest reading since November 20, 2008, during the depths of the great financial crisis. Credit quality spreads blew out. Even Treasury bond yields moved higher, while the price of gold dropped by $83.05 per ounce to $1,570.70. The policy responses discussed below helped to calm the situation down on Friday. Let's have a closer look at the recent market turmoil, especially Thursday's capitulation action. Point number 1, S&P 500 sectors. See the print version of this morning briefing for the performance derby of the S&P 500 sectors from February 19 through Friday's close. Six of them are back in correction territory, down 10.0% to 19.9% through Friday's close, while five are still in bear markets, down 20% plus. Through Thursday's close, all but consumer staples and healthcare were in bear markets. Point number 2, stock investment styles. Since February 19 through Friday's close, the S&P 500, 400, and 600 price indexes are down 19.9%, 26.3%, and 28.6%. Their forward PEs were down to 15.2, 12.9, and 12.6 on Friday. Over the same period, S&P 500 growth is down 18.5%. while S&P 500 value is down 21.7%. The forward PE of the former was down to 19.6, while the latter was 11.9 on Friday. Stay Home dramatically outperformed Go Global last week. See the print version of this morning briefing the performance derby for the major MSCI regions around the world in local currencies since February 19. Point number 3, credit quality spreads. On Thursday, the yield on high-yield corporate bonds soared to 8.15%, the highest since April 12, 2016. Its spread over the 10-year U.S. Treasury bond yield jumped to 727 basis points, the highest since February 29, 2016. The AAA municipal bond yield spread jumped to 80 basis points on Thursday, the highest since January 5, 2009. Point number 4, commodities. Interestingly, the CRB Raw Industrial Spot Index edged down, but didn't plummet on Thursday. The same can be said for the price of copper. They may be signaling that the global economy is already getting some support from a recovery in China's economy, as workers go back to work. See the print version of this morning briefing for the fourth topic, which focuses on the policy responses to the pandemic. That's all for now. Thanks for listening today. Please see the hedge clause on our website www.yourdanny.com. Please let Dr. Ed know if I am doing a better job for you than Siri or Alexa. Have a great day.